You know, on Friday afternoons, we always catch up with my great friend Zach Osterman. We're going a little early today because we have Bucks and Pacers for you. Pre-game starts at 5 o'clock, and that's usually when we talk to Zach on Thursdays and Fridays. And with the Bucks and Pacers tipping off 5:30 for a NBA Crazy Horse Tavern happy hour special, the Pacers, Indianapolis, should be rollicking at this moment, getting ready for the first playoff game since, what, 2018? I can't remember what Dustin told us earlier, but I should remember. But Zach is here today, and we're talking hoops. Not those kind of hoops. We gave you your Pacers dose earlier, and we're talking the college game and a little football as the NFL opened the draft last night with round one in Detroit. Almost 300,000 people in attendance. Well, that's a lot. And then Indianapolis had big news yesterday with Joe Hogsett, the mayor, announcing that they are going to pursue a Major League Soccer franchise. So we're not devoid of things to talk about today, but as everybody tunes in to hear, the beat writer for the IndyStar.com for Indiana basketball and football, the transfer portal, Journey had the song Wheel in the Sky Keeps on Turning. Maybe they should change that to Wheel in the Transfer Portal in the Sky Keeps on Turning. How are you this afternoon?
I'm good. How about you, Glass?
Well, I always enjoy our conversations, whether it's off the air, on the air, or anywhere else. But we need some shooters, and a couple of them have been on campus here in the last 5 or 6 days in Bloomington. Tell us what we know or don't know, and, well, don't you always tell me if they're on campus, then they leave and they haven't committed, it's usually not a good sign? Well, I'll let you clear up any misconceptions I might have and our fans might have.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the attention at this point is focused on Luke Goody. Fort Wayne native, of course, played at Illinois the last 3 years. I think I saw this from, I want to say it was Tony Adranya on Twitter. A couple days ago, City was in the 88th percentile on jump shots this season. So that gives you a sense for, you know, just how sort of regular his shooting motion is. He's never shot under 37% in a single season from three. Last season was far and away his highest volume season in terms of three-point attempts. And he shot 38.9%. on 157 attempts, which I don't think I have to tell anybody would have made him, you know, comfortably Indiana's best three-point shooter at that volume anyway. And, you know, his averages didn't really – I mean, his average dipped down to 37.3% in Big Ten play, but that's still good. You know, against KenPom Tier A opponents over 18 games, he attempted 63 threes and hit almost 43% of them. You know, he's a really good shooter. He's a really, really good – catch and shoot player, 6'6", 6'7", obviously Big Ten experience, and not a bad defensive rebounder, it should be said. The 2 years that he's played more or less a full season, because his sophomore year got interrupted. He only played 10 games, I think, through some injuries. But the 2 years he's played at least 28 games, he's had a defensive rebounding rate above 13%. So he's a useful piece from the guard or wing areas, rebounding the ball as well. But the big, you know, the big headline here is he's a really good three-point shooter. And, you know, for a team that's added, obviously, a lot of, you know, sort of creativity and some guard depth and you know, things like that, he has the kind of skill set that maybe Indiana's still sort of looking for. We've seen them with a couple other visitors come through, Anderson, the kid from Florida Gulf Coast, and Connor Asijan, from Wisconsin, but I think Goody is, it's probably fair to say, is getting more focused than anybody else that we've seen from Indiana so far, and we'll see if it leads to a commitment here.
He's visiting yesterday and today, Friday, and we'll see if anything pops up in the wheels of your Twitter feed as the afternoon and evening roll along. Goody has big IU connections. We all love the Hollywood side of this too, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, he's from the state, and I think a whole bunch of his family played football in Indiana. I am not positive on this. Someone told me Trent Green he's related to Trent Green somehow.
It's his uncle. I read somewhere.
I'll Google that while we're talking. But yeah, I think he played. If I'm not mistaken, Goody played high school football too. So yeah, it says, here we go. His uncle, Trent Green. This is from fightingillini.com. So this is the Illinois official website. Grandfather was a former first round pick and 2-time pro bowler. Trent Green is his uncle. He's related to Skowronek, who I think played Northwestern, Notre Dame. And I think if I'm not mistaken, he has some family ties to Indiana as well, in terms of, I think, maybe some siblings that go to school here. Anyway, I'm starting to get a little bit out of my depth. I don't tend to, you know, ask what everyone's family connection to everything is all the time.
I thought his dad played football here, or uncle played football here too, or something. But the point is, it's a romantic story.
He's obviously very familiar with Indiana, and he's obviously very familiar with the Big Ten. He's played, I think it's 76 career games. And again, he had that one season where he was injured. But he's used to being fully healthy. He played 38 of a possible 40 Big Ten games. So we're talking about somebody who's seen a lot of Big Ten basketball, been to all the arenas, dealt with all the crowds, faced all the coaches.
Did the travel, high academics at Illinois too. So nothing's going to bother him and bother him in that department either. And I think this continues the motif, if you will, in the transfer portal 2024 edition for Indiana University. It's a big conference player where we can worry about basketball as opposed to worry about bringing them up to speed and doing it a little differently perhaps than other programs do. These guys should all just assimilate into and hit the ground running, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you got to pull them together. And you've got to, as we've talked about before, it's all kind of fantasy sports until the coach can get a hold, the staff can get a hold of guys and just, you know, figure out roles and minutes distribution and things like that. But, you know, even if we're trying to avoid the cliches of win the transfer portal or this or that, if I told you this was the haul Indiana was going to get, you know, the thing it was going to get, let's live in a hypothetical world as we're talking right now. Goody has not committed. But let's live in a hypothetical world where he does. If I told you Indiana was going to get these four players in the portal, in addition to Bryson Tucker, the five-star freshman, you'd say, man, that was probably a pretty good spring. You know, and yes, you still got to pull all the pieces together and all that, but there's a lot of ways in which a lot of this stuff makes sense and a lot of this stuff fits together. And now you've just got to, you know, make a team out of them, for lack of a better term.
Zach Osterman, the IndyStar.com beat writer for Indiana basketball and football. The portal in the sky keeps on turning. May 1st, though, you got to be in, right? Doesn't matter when you come out of the portal, but you have to be in by May 1st. That's next Wednesday.
Correct, yes.
So, last minute, last call. I don't know how this works, but we talked a little bit yesterday about what's left for Indiana to gather. Goody, if as you said, if he does end up coming to Indiana University, that is a big piece of the puzzle because he is a flat-out shooter, and Indiana hasn't had a ton of that or multiple pieces of that over the last 4, 5, 6 years. If Goody decides to go another direction, who else is on the radar? The portal closes for people entering it, but it stays open infinitely, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's the point at which you kind of become more beholden to, you know, when you have to be enrolled and, you know, guys could, you know, when guys have to be like on campus and taking classes to be able to work out with the team and stuff like that. But yeah, it's all day May 1st. And I think it closes, you know, at midnight or 11:59 or whatever. And then there will always be, you know, a handful of straggler names that basically leak out over the next couple of days that got their paperwork in on time, but you know, it was 11:48 p.m. and so we didn't find out about it till the next day.
Always helpful. Always, always helpful. Zach Osterman, Indy Star, checking in with us. Well, the NFL draft was last night, and the confluence of the Atlanta Falcons and Michael Penix Jr. Well, you didn't think that was going to happen. I didn't think that was going to happen. But, well, those are two things that you've spent a lot of time covering in your in your world. How shocked were you last night when that pick was announced?
It's funny because there had been some reporting around kind of the idea that the Falcons were enamored with Penix, but I think everyone assumed that meant that either A, the Falcons might try to move back, or B, the Falcons might sort of, you know, be targeting him if he's still around for, you know, round two or something like that. To take him at eight, I think Michael Penix is a really good quarterback prospect. Obviously, he's got to stay healthy, and he's got the injury history. The flip side is, you know, everybody's got to stay healthy, and especially with quarterbacks, you don't have injury history until you do. You know, everybody's always just one bad snap away. It just doesn't make sense to me anyway to tie down all that money in Kirk Cousins, which, you know, more or less marries you to him for at least the next 2 years based on my admittedly amateur reading of the contract language, you know, that's been reported probably the next 3 years. And then to not just go take a quarterback with the number eight overall pick, but also a 24-year-old quarterback who played 6 years in college and in theory shouldn't need that much more seasoning. Having said all that, whatever. I mean, you know, if you want me to talk about it from Penix's perspective, you know, it's a great opportunity in the sense that you've got a new staff there that's going to get some time. You're going to get to work behind a veteran quarterback. If you do wind up breaking into regular snaps anytime in the next couple of years, you've got a ton of pieces around you. Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, you know, Drake London, a pretty good offensive line, I think an underrated offensive line. But, you know, spending the draft capital that way doesn't make sense to me. But, I this all played out like an Alex Smith, Pat Mahomes kind of thing. And, you know, we say, well, the Falcons just, you know, they were playing chess while everybody else was playing checkers. But it's not a franchise that has earned a lot of that benefit of the doubt. You just hope they have a good plan for Penix, that obviously, you know, none of this causes kind of disruption within the locker room with Kirk Cousins coming in. You know, he is 35 years old, so I don't think anyone would necessarily look at the Falcons and say, oh, well, you already had your quarterback in the future. What are you doing? It's more just the, you know, why did you spend all that money then if you were just going to turn around and take a, you know, a quarterback at eight.
Did Cousins tear his Achilles last year? Is that right? Do I have that right?
Was it last year?
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah, I can't remember either. But again, the Falcons will look like geniuses if Cousins does get hurt. That's just, you know, you'd be, oh, okay, well, we've got it ready. But to your point, there were some definite other needs, perhaps, they could use. But it's a great story for Penix, and I know IU fans have continued to follow him because he really didn't leave on quote-unquote bad terms from Indiana. It just didn't work here. He just needed some luck. He needed a change of scenery and moving. Remember when everyone was worried about him coming from Florida so far away to Indiana? Well, he went to Washington. And Kalen DeBoer, and 4,800 yards later a season, whatever that was, very, very interesting. And, well, we'll see. And we wish Michael nothing but the best of luck. Big news in the big capital city last evening as we were getting wrapped up on the second part of the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour yesterday. Joe Hogsett, the mayor, met the media and decided that after some talks with MLS Commissioner Don Garber, Indianapolis is going to throw their hat in the ring for an MLS expansion franchise. Well, all you need is $750 million for the league and a stadium to play in. That doesn't seem too difficult, does it?
Right. I mean, it is, you know, On the one hand, obviously Indianapolis has had professional soccer for a while now, and there does seem to be sort of a, I don't want to say a groundswell, but like a growing appetite for investing in stadium infrastructure and things like that. I think that, you know, your point about, I mean, it's, you know, to go from where it is right now to the MLS level is a big step. But on the other hand, you know, I think it was my editor, Matt Glenesk, who pointed out, you know, the idea, these stadium dreams don't really, you know, sort of carry a lot of weight for a lower tier team. And I'm not trying to do Indy 11 down, but it's more just kind of, if you're going to build, you know, if you're going to commit to building a stadium and a mixed use area at kind of that price point, then you really need to be doing it for a, you know, a top tier franchise. You need to be doing it for a first division club. And, you know, there's a lot of hurdles. I don't think the MLS has talked a lot about expansion lately, but it does feel like maybe there's room for one or two more teams there. And in fairness, you know, we have seen the MLS move into, you know, markets not dissimilar to, not far from Indianapolis, Nashville, Cincinnati, St. Louis. Obviously, they've been in Columbus for a very, very long time. And those, you know, those clubs have both done well on the pitch and also done well in terms of fan support and building that culture very quickly. And, you know, it's worth saying the MLS season is essentially spring through fall, which means it would not, you know, you'd have a long stretch there where it's not conflicting with the Colts. It's not conflicting with the Pacers, or at least not in a meaningful way. In theory, at least, there's probably a, you know, a space there for the MLS to carve out in the city. But yeah, I mean, there are an awful lot of hurdles that it seems like still need cleared.
Yeah, taxpayer dollars. Who's going to fund this? How are we going to fund it? Whose rate goes up? And granted, not everybody loves the sporting world and, oh, it's just a couple more bucks here and there. Well, that's a very real discussion in a lot of cities. And as we pointed out beforehand, the teaser, Zach Osterman, was the who is going to put this money up? Who is going to be the driving leading force in this? The quote is, an experienced and well-respected sports executive who has held leadership roles in MLS and global soccer. That was the dangling participle given on where the money is going to come from. So that, again, is very, very interesting. And I think Indianapolis can handle it, but I think your point about the Indy 11 is right. And here's the other point. You and I tend to follow the world's game just a little bit. The Indy 11 can coexist with an MLS team. There are a lot of cities that have more than one club. And if you're a diehard Indy 11 person, it's not one or the other, is it? I don't think I've read it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I think it's hard in, particularly in non, you know, in smaller, large cities, if you understand what I'm saying.
Jumbo shrimp.
I mean, put it this way, Atlanta had a moderately supported, you know, USL club.
Silverbacks.
Who drew crowds at times and had a couple really good seasons. The minute United moved in, it just didn't feel like there was enough airspace for both of them. Now, you know, it is worth saying that Atlanta is a city with a lot more sports going on. You know, Indy has the 500, and then it has an NFL franchise and an NBA franchise. Atlanta's also got a baseball franchise. It's trying to get back into the hockey game. you know, it's got a culture of high school sports that probably collide more directly with a soccer season because of, you know, high school football, high school baseball. Not that those things aren't important in Indiana, but, you know, the biggest ticket sort of high school sport in Indiana is basketball. That's not going to get in the way of a soccer season, at least not an MLS season. But, you know, just generally, like, I don't feel like a lot of those places have been able to, a lot of those sort of, you know, a lot of the cities that we're talking about have been able to sustain a lower division club when a bigger one has moved in. And I mean, I'm looking at like the USL right now: Charleston, Louisville, Detroit, Tampa Bay, Birmingham, Hartford, Loudoun, Rhode Island, North Carolina FC. I'm not sure where they're based.
They're in Cary, so, I think, believe it or not.
Yeah. Miami's obviously got two clubs, but I mean, that, you know, Pittsburgh and Indy, those are, so out of the 12 teams in the Eastern Conference, one is in a city with an MLS franchise, and it's virtually brand new. You go to the West, Sacramento, you know, Monterey Bay, New Mexico, San Antonio, Orange County, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Oakland, Tulsa, Memphis, El Paso, Colorado Springs. Again, there's not really a lot of you know, crossover or whatever. I think it is tricky to.
It's tricky if you're going to try to make a fortune off of it.
Well, but the problem is that you need to convince the league it's worth it. And that means you probably need to convince the league that, you know, you can, for lack of a more artful term, make a fortune off of it.
Sure. But you got to put up a fortune to make a fortune. I get all that too.
I'm not trying to pick on Indy 11. I'm not trying to pick sides on the debate over which is better or whatever. It is just hard for me to imagine long-term an MLS club and a USL club in a city that is not small by any means, but is also certainly not, you know, one of the big four or five in the country: New York, LA, Chicago, sure, Boston, et cetera. You know, it's hard for me to imagine just there being enough airspace there for both of them, essentially.
Well, if one's sold out and you got a 20,000 seater and people want to go watch another game, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it works out. And let's remember one thing: Mayor Joe Hogsett in Indianapolis can apply for MLS expansion all he would like. That does not guarantee expansion will be granted. Let's not forget that angle of this argument as well. So, well, we will hang on with both hands and see how this develops moving forward. And a tough day for Indy 11 fans it might be with that development going south. All right, buddy, have a great weekend. When we get back next week, we will be talking about graduation. What are you doing over there, man?
I just put something down on the table. Sorry.
It's all right. 2350.
Sorry about that.
You're all right. It was just louder than I anticipated. All right. We'll keep an eye on the soccer developments. We will keep an eye on the rest of the NFL draft rounds 2 and 3 tonight, and 4, 5, 6, and 7 on Saturday. Pacers Bucks are getting ready to go next. Next week, graduation weekend here. Indy in the month of May. Who knows where the transfer portal will be? Come back and join us next week, will you please?
Absolutely, as always.
Zach Osterman from the Indianapolis Star. You can find him online at Zach Osterman on the xindystar.com. Please support local journalism, and I'll never stop saying that. They tell the stories and help us get up close and personal with the insider work, and Zach's the best. He joins us every Thursday and Friday. He's early this week. Why? Well, after Joe Smith reports, we're going to turn it over to Mark Boyle and the Pacers Radio Network. The first playoff game in Indy since 2018. Pacers and the Milwaukee Bucks for a 5:30 tip-off. So that means our pregame will start right at 5 o'clock. And Pacers looking to lead that series 2-1. The Pacers and Bucks will be back on our airwaves on Sunday as well. 6:30 for a 7 o'clock tip-off. Pacers big 6.5-point favorites tonight. Chris Middleton's banged up a little bit. We don't think Giannis is going to play. Let's ride that wave in game one at home to a 2-1 lead and then hopefully handle that home court advantage on Sunday and go back to Milwaukee for game five Tuesday, leading 3-1. Wouldn't that be nice? Well, you can't win Sunday's game and go up 3-1 if you don't win Friday's game. So best of luck to the Pacers tonight. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday. Reds are on the radio tomorrow in Texas against the Rangers, 3:35. And we'll have IndyCar from Birmingham. Not that one, the one in Alabama, starting at 1 o'clock on Sunday. Have a fantastic Friday. Pacer playoff basketball is next.